Welcome to Edible Words, as we delve into the world of creative food and experience design. We bring together inspiring people from different backgrounds to talk about past, current, and future food and design trends. From food culture to eating spaces, food science, and experience design, we want to talk about it all. Add to that a pinch of well-being, curiosity, sustainability, creativity, and of course, our senses. I'm Maud, a creative food and experience designer based in London in the UK, although I like to move quite a lot, so you might find me elsewhere. I'm the founder of Salty Studio, a food design studio exploring innovative and sensory experiences around food. Edible Words was born during the first lockdown in 2020, after all my events were cancelled, and most of everyone else's. And I've really enjoyed connecting with amazing people from around the world. Join us as we embark on this journey to understand more about our connection with food through design systems. All right, so hello everyone. Welcome to this new episode of Edible Words. And today we have two girls from Umani. We have Jorge and Ixchel. So maybe Jorge, if you want to introduce yourself to start.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Mav. Well, I'm Jorge. We have a business, Ixchel and me, about fermentation. It's a workshop in Mexico City. And we started a few years ago. And with the pandemic and all the stuff that is happening right now, we get stronger and we're in this. Thank you for having us.
Amazing. What about you, Ixchel?
Hi, I'm Ixchel, and yeah, as Jorge said, we are the co-founders along with Juan Carlos of Umani Fermentos. We are a fermentation workshop based in Mexico City, and we make like fermented products, but also we like to give classes and cater events. Like right now we are working on that because of the situation.
Yeah, but of course
we are trying.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I can't wait to hear more about this. So how did you actually come up with the name Umani?
So we wanted a word that meant something for us, like beyond fermentation or kombucha or like the normal stuff you get. I started to look for names, and we wanted a name that said something. So here in Mexico, in the state of Michoacán, there is an indigenous group called Purépechas, and Umani is a Purépecha word, and it means to cook. So we like that. So it's
amazing.
A word that reminds you of humans, and also a lot of people think it's umami.
Yeah,
we don't care. Like it's not like they are confusing us with something unrelated. So we like it. It's short. It's like easy to remember, and also it means something.
Amazing. Yeah, and I think it's so interesting to be able to link it with the local cultures around where you are, and trying to revive some of the languages as well.
Exactly.
Because that's actually something that is going away quite a bit. So So actually, just as a first question, but what is your definition at the moment of food design? Because this is sort of what the podcast is about. I'm trying to talk with other people about food design, what they think it is, even if they're not too related to it. I think it's just interesting to hear about what everyone thinks is food design. And then so if you wanted to, how do you feel about that?
I think food design is like, we have been doing these since ancient times, but as a concept is kind of recent. I think probably because we have a necessity to change the structures of the system, of the food system. And we are aware of the importance about food in our lives in the most obvious way, like the survival issue, but also getting meaning of ourselves through the food. So it's like a tool we can use to develop better systems and experience about food, around food. Access to resources, nutrients, pleasure, all that make us who we are.
Yeah, amazing. And actually, the whole idea of food design, that's why I actually quite like to talk about it, is because it's not just around, everything around food. It's not just only about the food. So that's why I love to talk about people who have very different and varied types of businesses. So it'll be interesting to hear a bit more.
Yeah, and also, like, for us, like, we have never thought about, like, food design or design as a concept until we met our designer, like, the guy that helped us with Umani, like, as a brand. So he is an industrial designer, but he worked also in kitchens. So he really got us, and he explained us, like, you can develop things and we can do things using the design method. So even when we like plan a menu or a pop-up, we use the design method to came with it. So I think it's like a broader sense. I think this is like really specific to us, like as an example, but we will never like imagine that you can apply this to a lot of things, like to the designing of your brand, to the design of a new product, like for us, the kombucha, or like the bottles, the system to deliver it, to even to create a dish or a food experience. So it's really amazing, like all the applications it has.
Exactly. Yeah, no, completely. And that's exactly how I feel, I think, as well. There's still so much that we don't know about food design that we can, there's so much we can talk about around it as well. And I think I completely agree with the idea of using the sort of design thinking and design methods to implement that in the sort of food industry. And I just think that both industries have so many things to teach each other. And then also the other side is also to start looking at all the other types of industries as well. And that's something that I find, yeah, particularly interesting, is to bring in lots of different people into this. And so actually, out of all the options of making food products, why did you look into fermented food? Like, what is your connection around it?
I don't know. I think, first of all, because we enjoy fermented products, fermented food. And we wanted to do stuff and share with people what we love. Then we ask ourselves, what if we do this as a way of living, right? Get paid of it. So it was kind of a natural for us to start a project to develop our interests. And our connection is that we were looking to find something that brings value to the table. And through fermentation, we realized that we can do a lot, starting with the connection with life per se. Here is, you know, literally, you see the transformation in the products with through life, right? So, and to get it through our senses, play and develop creativity, textures, flavors, almost anything.
And so actually, is fermented food like quite popular actually in Mexico, or how is it? Are there like any traditional dishes with fermented food?
Yeah, sure. I think in all cultures, we have traditional fermented foods. In Mexico, the major part is in beverages. We have also a goddess called Mayahuel for the pulque. So it's really important to the culture, that kind of product.
Is tepache from Mexico as well?
Yeah, also like
tepache during the pineapple. I tried that actually this summer. It was really good.
Did you like it?
Yeah,
I loved it.
It's very popular now. Like, I think because it's super easy to make, and also it's like instead of wasting the scraps of the pineapple, you can use it for something. So like now here, if you go to most of taquerias, like the traditional ones, they serve you tepache.
Oh, it makes me want to travel.
But we have a lot of fermented corn-based beverage, like different styles around the country.
Mm. Yes, it's interesting. I think because it seems like there's sort of a trend of the fermentation and like pickled things at the moment. But it's fun to think that actually a lot of countries have had fermented recipes, like traditional recipes for super long time. So it's fun to think how can we use those as well and use those techniques and then incorporate them with sort of newer trends and maybe flavors and things like that.
Yeah, and also like sometimes you don't even know it's like traditional or originated in your country. Like I don't know, we just read about water kefir, and also water kefir, there's a theory it originated in Mexico, like growing and feeding on the cactus plants, the nopal. So but here we call it típicos. But it's the same thing, like water kefir and tibicos. But it's not really as popular as other fermented beverages. But in other parts of the world, it really is. Mm. So it's...
Yeah, yeah. You have also milk or like yogurt kefir as well. Mm.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find actually the... Because you need special like the beads or the starter for the water kefir. I was trying to look for some ones. They're quite rare to find here. But then you can find the ones to make, like the powder to make the a yogurt kefir, like milk kefir, which is slightly different.
It's, they are, in Mexico, we call them the milk ones, búlgaros, and the water ones, típicos. But they are about kefir in English.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Yeah, and so on your Instagram page, because at the moment you only have a page on Instagram, right? You're working on, you don't have a website completely yet, but it says that you're a kitchen with culture. And so like, what do you mean by that? What kind of culture are you trying to create through your food, and or what kind of experiences through your workshops are you trying to create?
So we think of it like as a broader meaning, not just like kitchen, but as a cocina, meaning cuisine, like all food related. And also the culture part, as Jorge said before, it's about like not only the cultural human meaning, but also the cultural as a, the relationship of us to the bacteria and the microorganisms, and also as the cultures of the microbes, because they are also known as culture. So it's like a double meaning. So it's like cooking with culture, because it has a meaning and a traditional thing to it, but also about the living part of it.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah, kind of overlaps the meanings.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's so interesting. I think it's, we don't really think that. I think we're getting more and more aware about the food that we're eating, the food that we're putting inside our bodies. But I think there's like a deeper level than that, and that's what you're talking about. I think with like the food culture, like the actual microbiome and everything, and that can even go into how food can affect your moods. And that was something I actually looked into at some point. The whole like psychobiotics. And everything about how like your gut is connected to your brain and everything. Yeah, it's super interesting. So yeah, and so actually, can you tell us a bit more about the different products that you have?
Sure. Right now we have vinegars, we have kombucha, we have kraut, and all of our products we are interested in add a touch of Mexican, you know, about us, through the ingredients. So we made a kombucha of Hoja Santa. It's a plant we use aromatic in Veracruz and Oaxaca. The vinegar mezcal is a spirit, also from Oaxaca and other regions of Mexico that has a lot of importance in that places in our country. And we care about the quality of the ingredients and that they write for themselves. Also, in the kombucha, we or in the vinegar or something, we want to the ingredients to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to talk for themselves.
Can you help me, Chen? Like, we always, when we are developing a new product, we start like thinking about the flavors we want to develop and the meaning of that flavor. So we do not always choose like the easy flavors like people are going to recognize. Of course, we like, for example, in the kombuchas, we have three flavors. One is rosemary, grapefruit. So people, when you tell them it's rosemary, grapefruit, they get the flavor in their head super easy. Like it's the, of the three, it's like the most recognizable. Like you imagine what it is going to taste. But we have the other two flavors, which is the hoja santa. And hoja santa has like a peppery mint flavor to it. And it's traditionally used for like, not for drinks or dessert. It's more for like fish or beans. So when you tell someone it's a hoja santa kombucha, they are not quite sure what it is going to taste. So it's like a leap of faith.
How do people like it?
Yeah, but when they do try it, they like it so much. So it's super easy for people to try the grapefruit one. Mm-hmm. But once they give themselves an opportunity and try the hoja santa, they are like surprised and they really like it. And also we have another flavor, which is cáscara de café. I don't know if you know that ingredient. Cáscara is like the coffee husk. Like you have the cherries of coffee, and then what we eat is the seed. But there's a husk, like the red thing you see. And then when in the coffee product, in the coffee process, it is a byproduct of it. But it has a lot of flavor to eat, like
amazing.
There's no point on wasting it. So we made an infusion, and it tastes like kind of tamarind, like plum, peachy. Mm-hmm. So it has a really nice taste.
Interesting.
It doesn't take taste of coffee, not at all. Mm-hmm. It's something different, but it has only that. Like we do not make like a lot of combinations. Like we do not like at this point. Maybe later we're going to try that. But as Jorge said, we like choosing an ingredient and making it shine. So yeah,
I think we keep it simple.
Yeah. And so why did you feel it was important then to use some local ingredients? How did you manage to try and find the right ingredients and ingredients that people could maybe knew about but not that much?
Yeah, so with the ingredients, it's like it's a hard thing because you also need to think about the sourcing of the ingredients. It's not like we just like that ingredient, but we also have to find a responsible and also like a source that it's going to be sure. Like we can't buy something from one producer once and then another. So we are really committed with our products. And we also try to explain to people what it tastes like. So it's like we take ingredients people know, not in this way. So it's kind of hard for them to try it, but also they are curious about what it is going to taste.
That sounds amazing. I'd love to taste them. And so what is the other brand that you were talking about as well, Collab? How is that working at the moment?
Okay, so we met Collab a few years ago. And it was founded by some friends of ours, and we really like the brand. Like we work with them like for pop-ups and something. And then during the pandemic they changed their place and went to another country. And they offered us to run Colab because they didn't want to lose it.
Amazing.
Yeah, and we were like, "Well, that's great because we love your brand." And
yeah.
So, and also, like, it is a bottled beverage, so it shares a lot with us. And also, like, the brand values go along with ours. Like, they are really focused on fair trade, on sustainability, on organic produce, on quality ingredients. So it was like a
and it's
really good.
So night. It's a cold brew coffee, right?
Exactly. It's a cold brew coffee. And it's made with coffee from Guerrero, which is a state here in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And so how is the process of the coffee making for that one? Is it quite specific then?
Yeah, so we use only two ingredients, which are the coffee and water. And the most important one is time, because we replace heat with time. So in cold brew coffee, we let the coffee stand with water for around 20 hours. So it's a very longer process compared to
the traditional
one.
Yeah. I would have thought actually even longer, but I actually don't drink coffee, so I don't know that much about coffee. But that's quite interesting that it's 20 hours. I would have thought, yeah, that it would be a bit longer.
They tried a lot of things. They tried like more than 40 varieties of coffee, and also like, the toast is a very complicated thing to get to the point they like it. And they tried less hours, more hours, the temperature, like a lot of things to get to the recipe that we are making now. Like the developing of it was a complicated, fun process. And the very special thing, like what I like the most about cold brew, it's like it's a lot less acidic than the regular coffee because of the extraction process. So I like coffee very much, but sometimes it hit hard on my digestive system. So with cold brew, I do not have that problem.
How come? Yeah, what's the difference then onto your digestive system?
Because it's a lot less acidic because of the temperature. So it doesn't extract like that much acid.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And so where usually all the different products, where are they sold? Where do you sell them?
We sell in restaurants in Mexico City and other states of the country. Also in the page of Colab and in Instagram. We are very in touch with the people and
amazing.
They can send us
out. Yeah. And so also the Umani products on the Colab website then?
Yeah, we have just the kombuchas because it's like a beverage thing and we didn't want to convert Colab. Yeah. Like we like.
Yeah.
And also like we really care about who do we sell our products. Like we like to like build strong relationships with the cafes, restaurants, markets, online things that we work with. We like them to be responsible and to we have made great friends through this process of knowing people that are selling
it's like
that's a big part of the food industry anyway. It's just about building relationships and creating a whole community.
It's great, but it's also hard during the pandemic. Like sometimes you want to go to the pop-ups that they are making, but you are not sure if that is responsible or am I going to do something
how
I shouldn't.
But how is the situation at the moment then?
It's like we are not really sure. Like people are starting to get the vaccine and we hope it will work. But it's just for people older than 60 years now. So a lot of people are not getting the vaccine yet. But we try to keep it safe, like to go and see the people. But we are always wearing a mask. And so it's been hard for us. Like you see sometimes like a lot of restaurants already open and not always taking the best care. But we really care about that. Like, we think it's very important to be responsible. And also, like, we are this close to to, like, I'm not going to say to a normal life, but to a more, a new normal, back. Like, safer.
No, completely. Yeah, I don't know, it'll be interesting. I think it's definitely hit hard, or the whole hospitality and, like, food industry, quite a lot, because of all the restaurants, like, everything closing up, anything. Yeah, it's difficult, I think, also on the like, mental side as well, because I think a lot of us, especially in the food industry, we love connecting with other people and being around other people, having, like, lots of people around and cooking and, like, doing things
all
together.
It's all about sharing.
Yeah, and using our hands as well quite a lot. Exactly, yeah. Like, sharing plates, sharing conversations, stories, food. Lots of things, and food brings people together. So, I think it's been difficult.
But I think at the same time, it has like helped connect people that are farther away, like you and us.
Completely.
Like workshops and a lot of like talks that usually you wouldn't be, that they wouldn't be accessible. Because you are in that country, and now with the online everything, you get much more information and access to things. So there's always a lot of sides to everything.
Oh, completely. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think we've really had to, like, I think it's forced us to change a bit and to adapt to the different to the situations. A lot of restaurants in the UK have, and I'm sure in other places, have, like, switched to takeaway. They've had to change their menu a little bit. And some of them have actually realized, actually this works quite well, and things like that. So the whole online and technology has really helped, luckily, especially with, like, these online talks, being able to connect with people from across the world. I think would tell people that it would be so easy a few years ago. I don't think we would really, like, I don't think we would think about it even. I don't think it would even cross our minds. Whereas now, distance isn't really a problem anymore. We can really, like, it's fine to just have a chat with someone across the world. It's just become a normality, which is, I think, I find that amazing. Totally.
And I think it's also an opportunity for people to know what it means to cook for yourself and be more connected to your food, right? With all the process and the value it has. So I cannot always be in a restaurant, so I do my list of ingredients and I prepare something, maybe YouTube channels, and we have a lot of books and things that can tell us what to do with what we have. So I think it's an interesting thing too.
Definitely, yeah, I think it has made us, I think, a lot closer to food. I think we've become a lot more food aware. I'm not sure how it was in Mexico, but in London, when the lockdown happened, a lot of people who are very vulnerable, they couldn't leave their homes to go and buy food. And it really showed that even in a big city like this, which is fairly wealthy, there is still so much like food poverty around here. So there was a lot of charities. They started putting in place like food deliveries, things like that. So I think, and then also a lot of like food, like veg boxes and things like that. We have a lot of those started to get delivered here. Lots of different brands. And I think we are starting to think a lot more about where food comes from. And we also have actually Brexit here as well happening, which is also putting a bit of an extra challenge in the food industry, because they haven't sorted out yet, like, the whole border issues and importing and exporting. I think there's a lot of conversations around food that we're having at the moment. There's the new Seaspiracy film. I don't know if you've seen it yet. I haven't looked at it yet. But there's a lot of conversations around that. And I think we are getting, I think the pandemic has definitely pushed us a bit, to talk about these different issues around the whole climate as well, but around food especially, I think. Yeah, because I think in London, for example, it's still so common to just go to the supermarket and get anything. We get like crazy exotic fruit from around the world and we still don't realize that they've come from super far.
What is the cost of that too?
I think we just expect that it's just, no, exactly. Yeah. And actually, I went to a market yesterday and I wasn't even, maybe that's something very, that everyone knows. I wasn't really aware. I saw a whole, lots of boxes of strawberries and they were actually all still white. And I think they were meant to like ripen at the market so that they become bright red when people want to buy them. And like, that's something like, how can you pick? I don't know, it just made me question. I'm sure it's a quite, I don't know, fairly common thing. But the idea of having to pick fruit when they are not ready is just so strange. But then also you have, I don't know, you just start thinking of a lot of things around food, like the seasonality of food, where these fruit and vegetables are grown. And
food design is all about that, right? To questions and try to give answers to the system and to the structures and to what we have and what we can do with that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's the really interesting side of food design, because I think a lot of people like the side of it, of it being like a fun and like trying to make food fun, and the sort of just the visual side of things, but it's, which is very important, and I think that's, it's still good to bring that back actually, especially when you're talking about these difficult topics, but it is also to try and find solutions, creative solutions to some of these issues too.
Totally.
Yeah. And so what do you both miss most about like the restaurants and events not happening at the moment? What is the first thing you will do when you're able to go to restaurants again, or like when things sort of go back to normal, if we can say that?
I think for me, I really miss having the pop-ups, like to develop a menu along with a restaurant like that we really care, and then sharing it with the people we love. It's like very, like I miss that a lot. It helps you build community, but also I think we miss like teaching, because like to the connection with people. But I think that's the two things I miss the most. And also hugging people.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, same. And how are the, can you tell us a bit more about actually the workshops that you were hosting, like the teaching side of things?
Yeah, for instance, right now we are like adapting. So we work with it's, I'm not sure like the
organization name of it,
and organization, yeah. So they are a local organization and they work with us. Right now we are developing classes for, they are not like, I'm sorry, it's very complicated even in Spanish, but
yeah,
that's cool. It's not a professional thing. It's like a technique grade for people. So they go there and study like cooking, like gastronomy, but not in a really like super professional thing. It's like shorter than that. So this organization, Casa Gallina, it came to us and proposed like, we really like your job, because we have given classes with them to kids. But now we like to propose this school that you can teach them fermentation, because right now like it's like a trendy thing. So it would really give those students a plus to understand fermentation. Like if you are like just taking a basic course because your lifestyle, maybe you can go to university, so you take that thing, and then you'll have this plus. So we're working with the school to develop it, because right now we don't know when are the students going to go back. So is it going to be an online thing, or also a like how we are going to make it work. But yeah, we like to teach that side. Also, like we do not like to keep secrets. Like, it's not like we invented these techniques. So we always like to share.
Yeah, I think it's so important. I think that's what a lot of brands, I think, are trying to do more and more. I think that's really, really great. It's just to share knowledge as much as you can, because it just helps everyone else.
So I was going to say that helping other brands, it's really important. Like, we don't really see other brands as a competition. Maybe it's a mistake for us, maybe it's a good thing, but we like to help because we would like that they will help us too. So for example, we have a friend which has another fermentation brand, and she is from Veracruz, which is one of the states we mentioned for Hoja Santa. So she was like, hey, we in my house, we have these really big Hoja Santa plantations, and we don't really, like, it's organic, it grows, like, very beautiful. So I know you have a kombucha that uses Hoja Santa. Would you like to try mine, and I can, like, be your sourcer? And I was amazing. Wow, that's amazing. Like, I don't care that you also make a kombucha. Yeah. Like, it's great. And we have helped her. Yeah. She's helping us. So I think it's very important because we are going to grow together and not, like, see each other as a competition all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important to build this stronger relationships with everyone.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely. Amazing. Well, it was lovely to have a chat with both of you. I feel like, as usual with all these podcasts, we can go on for ages and talk for so long. But yeah, no, it was really lovely to hear from both of you and what you do. And hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
Yay.
Yeah. Thank you, Maud, for having us.